The following program has been furnished and paid by Nathan P. Ross, CPA, and KSEV is not responsible for its content or the products or services offered.
Welcome to the Be a Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA, a show that helps you learn how planners can generate significantly more wealth now. Nathan will answer your questions about business or personal finance, or how to increase current cash flows and generate retirement savings to make sure you're on the right path, and so much more. Whatever your financial goal, Nathan can get you there faster. And now, here's your host, Nathan Ross.
This week's Be a Planner Syndication Mass Show with Nathan Ross, CPA, and Dan DuBose, CPA, is also joining me today. And for those of you that listen each week, you understand that we talk about real estate private partnership syndications on our Sunday show and try to help you understand various facets of analyzing the math on these real estate private partnerships and understanding who can invest in which type of projects, and in general talk about some of the current offerings that are out there that you may or may not, depends on your status as an investor, which class you fit into, you may or may not be able to participate. But the reality is, the more you look at these transactions, the more you understand about them, the easier it becomes for you to develop your own analytical skills and objectives and partake in what has to be one of the best asset classes going at present. And for all those that are in the market that are trying to get out, to get your money into some assets that aren't, you know, crawling up a moving facade, I guess you might say. It's like a wall that's, you know, going down, it's sinking, and you're clawing to try to get up above the watermark, I guess you might say. But in any event, the multifamily syndication space still appears to be going strong. There are some headwinds, you know, we've noted just last week. We talked about seeing lower equity multiples, lower returns due to the lower loan to value. I think I used the term LTV multiple times last week. Dan, you might attest to that. And I guess we should explain what an LTV is. You want to do that, or you want me to keep going?
Loan to value, LTV, the rate that the lender has related to the overall project cost.
Well,
LTV.
Yeah, you know, you think about it, it's still a remarkable thing that a lender will loan. Let's assume it has slipped to 65 now on average. That seems to be where a lot of these transactions have ended up. That's 65% of the purchase price of that asset that someone else is willing to pay on your behalf as an investor, and they're going to charge you what? Dan, that number's gone up a bit too, but it's still remarkable, correct?
Yeah, we were looking at one this week that's around, it's over 6% or over 5%, close to 6. So it's rather high right now relative to what we've been seeing, around 3-4%.
Yeah. Well, it's still amazing. I mean, in the good old days of 6 months ago, a lender might put up 75-80%. In exchange for you paying them 3.8% a year. And who gets the profit on that share, the remaining profit? Dan?
Say again, I'm sorry.
I said, who gets the profit that would go, if that were a partner putting up capital instead of a lender making a loan? So that leaves a lot of extra profits for the partners to enjoy, correct? I mean, that's the magic. Yeah, that's the magic of multifamily investing, and for that matter, single-family investing. It's just two different genres of real estate, and there's different metrics, math metrics on analyzing those transactions. But it is, even in the day of the heightened, the lower LTV, the higher interest rate, it still just amazes me that lenders will loan money at any percent to, you know, third parties like ourselves to buy these assets. It's crazy. In any event, I did want to clarify that's what was meant when I was throwing around the acronym LTV last week. Before we go further, let me remind folks that are listening that, you know, just because you hear us talk about these strategies, these terms, et cetera, here on the air, especially when we talk about specific transactions, please do not run out and try to DIY this on your own. Turn to your advisors. Hopefully you've got advisors that know the difference between a 506B and a 506C transaction and understand some of the math involved on equity multiple, cash-on-cash returns, internal rate of returns, refinances, and why you might want to do them versus selling, et cetera. And let them help you assess whether this asset space is for you. And if you don't have advisors that understand the lay of the land and private syndications, we're happy to consider working with you. If you'll go to our website at beaplanner.com, that's BEAPLANNER.com, and complete our intake forms. You'll see a link there at the top right. And we will be more than happy to take a look at what your specific facts and circumstances are and give you some idea of whether or not we could sync up our services with what your objectives are, essentially. So anyway, Dan, let's talk about something that we talked about yesterday on the TaxMash show that I didn't quite work into the Roth conversion discussion we had. And, you know, you were, after the show, you mentioned there were a couple things. Let's see. I was looking for your text you sent me here. And you made the mention some reasons to convert to Roth that I kind of skipped over. I mean, we talked about tax rates, how they've got to go up. And I was really focused on, well, hey, I'm trying to avoid tax on the go forward. I didn't really mention, you know, the historic low rates we're at right now, which is in and of itself a reason to consider Roth, assuming, you know, you think you're going to be pulling money out of your retirement funds. And I think it's interesting that a lot of people take comfort in the fact that, well, yeah, I've got $1 million or $2 million or $8 million, whatever the number is, and the retirement plans, and they totally overlook what are they overlooking, Dan? Their partner and how much their share, correct?
I'm sorry, Nathan, I was reading and not listening. I beg your pardon.
You were getting some coffee. When people say, you know, that they've got X number of dollars in the retirement plan, they never talk about the net. They talk about the gross. And the problem is, if you knew the gross, I mean, if you, I'm sorry, they talk about the gross, not the net. And the problem is, if you pin somebody down and say, well, okay, you got $2 million, but how much of that comes to your pocket versus the IRS's pocket or the government's pocket? And, you know, they'll stop and think, and then they realize, oh, we don't know because we're not there yet. And it's like, well, guess what's going to happen? Tax rates are going up. That we know. It's the math involved in the debt that we currently owe as a nation plus the additional borrowing. And we know mathematically, it's just math. We can calculate it. That sometime out around the year 2029 to 2030, unless rates change, there will not be enough money to pay the interest, the debt service on the entirety of our public debt. And what that means is borrowing or people that are willing to buy our T-bills will grind to a halt, or will require a higher interest rate, maybe some other preferential terms before those T-bills are going to be attractive enough for third-party buyers to buy. So, Dan, your point was, hey, while we're sitting here with tax brackets that are, again, aside from us really old guys, the lowest that they've been in our lifetime, we talked yesterday's show, we mentioned that 94% is the highest rate we had since at least you were born, maybe since I was born. I was born in 60, and I can't remember. It was sometime in that time frame that we had a top bracket of 94%. But top bracket now is 37.8. I don't remember that 0.8 if it applies to 37. I think it does. It certainly applies when you throw on the net investment income tax to get you up to 40.8. So maybe it is 37 plus the
37 3.8. 37 is the highest rate without the NIIT tax added, yeah.
Right, but for people that have significant capital gains, interest, dividends, et cetera, and there's a couple other items that go into that bucket, they're going to get to pay 40.8. But 40.8 looks a lot better than 88, which is what the Congressional Budget Office 12 years ago now said the top bracket would need to go up to fix the problem. And that was before we had $30 trillion in deficit and we're somewhere north of 130% of the country's GDP in terms of the debt amount. And they were thinking we wouldn't be to the 100% mark until 2040 or so. So we're worse off. So in any event, the rates are going to be high. Nobody knows what they'll be, but the reality is it cannot continue. And for those of you that want to learn more about that, the book by David McKnight, The Power of Zero, is a really good read. Or the next, there's a Netflix movie that he was involved with, or documentary, with David Walker, former comptroller for the U.S., effectively the U.S.'s CPA back under, I believe, George Bush and maybe part of Clinton's term. And he's been talking about this for a number of years. And again, the math is more than a little crystal. It's very crystal, and you can see exactly what's coming. And those would be a good way to learn more about that. Dan, you also mentioned the minority ownership. I think we talked about discounts, but the lack of marketability and the lack of minority ownership, two additional reasons that the Roth conversions make sense. We get a much lower tax bill to do the conversion once you've got your money over into these private partnerships than you'll get if it's sitting at Charles Schwab or Merrill Lynch or whoever, because the market value for publicly traded marketable investments is significantly higher than it is for private company investments in real estate. Something else I wanted to touch on that Dan and I, in answering some questions towards the end of the show, one of our listeners had submitted a question about, you know, is there one reason that we might consider taking our money out, the so-called rip the Band-Aid off approach that one of the local real estate, old school real estate mentor membership programs recommends. And I had mentioned that, you know, tax-wise at least, just looking at this in a narrow vacuum, I could see where if someone were doing an independently owned property, an IRO, we call it, that due to the fact that they would be getting significant tax benefits off of that property, that's about the only way that I would say mathematically you would come out in a position where you probably would know taxes. Now, again, that varies based on the facts and circumstances, but I'm just saying, hey, if there's one scenario, that might be it. Let me tell you why that rarely happens, or at least right out of the chute. What I see, the most successful syndicators out there or lead partners are ones that invested passively in other syndicators' transactions and got an understanding of how these creatures work, what the best practices are, you know, basically how to undertake or successfully undertake syndications. And I'm going to tell you, I've seen syndicators that are currently syndicating deals that may have invested in 15, 20, 30, as many as 40 to 50 passive transactions where they were simply an investor. They weren't running the project or the property. And those folks tend to be really successful once they start syndicating. And in the meantime, they've built up massive amounts of money with the retirement funds that they've invested with. And then they could take out a portion of that, obviously, instead of ripping the Band-Aid off and taking all of it. And pay just a smidgen of the tax that might otherwise be due as they're getting ready to do their own building. And so they're still going to get the tax benefits. And if that's still not palatable, which it's not to me, I don't want to pay taxes on my retirement money until I want to live on it, we can still work with you to where you can acquire a property, the independent or a syndicated property, with using your own 401 trust funds. And that's something that's doable within the bounds of the rules, which, you know, there are some rules we have to comport with. You can asset manage that property. You can't go out and start painting it and repairing the building, et cetera. Not that you would do that anyway, but the point is hands-on sweat equity, as it were, is not allowed when you're using your retirement funds, whether it's an IRA or whether it's a 401 trust. That's a prohibited transaction, and if that gets discovered, and actually you're obligated to report it, that's a big-time penalty if you cross that line. That said, stay within the bounds, use your money, and you know, make the adjustments that are required to comport with the rules, and that's a good scenario, perhaps. Dan, did you have anything you wanted to add to that you may have thought of after we got off the phone yesterday?
Yeah, I think we need to understand, maybe even talk more about the minority ownership and such as that to get those valuations decreased as much as possible within the bounds, you say, of the rules. It's very important, but I think it's something that needs certainly to be considered by one who might be considering this last option you talked about, too. I mean, get that money out at that lower value right now. I mean, it's a great time right now.
There's no question to get. I mean, when you think about it, and I don't know, I haven't really tried to peg a break-even point because there's so many different fact patterns. All I know is, I've got clients in their 60s and even 70s that are doing the Roth conversion because they've got, like you're a good example, Dan, you're in your 70s, but your mom was good stock, lived to 97 years old, I believe you told me. And that's a long time to get, if you were to convert to Roth today, someone in their 70s, even the IRS's life expectancy tables show that or predict that a male will live to age 85 to 86, females are 87, 88. So 97, obviously, is significantly longer. But when you think about the what the tax brackets are going to do, and again, the CBO, Congressional Budget Office, the umpire, if you will, on all legislation, they projected 150% increases in the tax brackets where the current 25%, or now it's 24 actually, would go to 63%. So think about that, and think about it over the next 30 years of your life, how much additional tax that's going to be if it's just taxable income. But think about it, if you do the conversion now, and yes, you're letting go of some dollars at a discounted basis, I might say, significantly discounted. And now you're not going to just maintain your existing tax bracket. You're going to have zero taxes on the income coming in off of this, what I think of as a above average rate of return type investment. I can't think of any other asset class that has the metrics of the real estate private partnerships. And so you know, eliminating tax altogether. And by the way, the Roth distributions do not count as provisional income, do they, Mr. DeBose?
Yeah, and that's very important to that zero tax calculation as well. Very important when it comes to your Social Security side of things.
That's right. So Social Security, a couple can earn, I believe it's, what, up to $44,000 before it starts to be taxable? Is that the level,
Dan?
Yes,
couple.
And so,
right,
so if you're talking about taking money from an annuity, perhaps some annuities would not count as provisional income, but let's say you had a pension, as an example. That's more than likely going to cause your Social Security to be taxable, whereas taking money out of a Roth IRA or an index universal life policy, which there's ways of taking that. Of course, the latter, the index universal life policy distributions are not even reported, much less taxed, if you structure them correctly. And that is an if that you need to have a tax pro look at. But the Roth distributions does not increase the provisional income. So your Social Security, if we can structure it correctly and you don't have other streams of income that you can't do anything about, like a pension, would escape tax. Now think about that for the rest of your life. This is not just next year's tax savings. This is every year. And
that's right.
And if you're paying, like a lot of our clients that don't have a choice because they've got pension income, it's 85% of whatever your combined Social Security is gets taxed. And then if you're in a higher bracket, that's a significant amount of money to avoid if you can. And the Roth gives you that capability. The pre-tax 401 distributions, for those of you that think you're going to have a lot of them when that time comes, are going to count against the provisional limit. So you will be paying tax on your Social Security. Anyway, let's do this. Let's take a break, and we'll come back in a few minutes. And then, Dan, let's talk about a couple of these transactions that we've been looking at that are currently in the capital raise mode.
The Syndication Math Show with Nathan Ross, CPA, focuses exclusively on helping investors understand the current options for investing. The syndication arena has changed. You can now take advantage of direct online investing options without expensive upfront membership fees. Nathan Ross, CPA, discusses these options and more, including the math involved with partnership selection, reporting, and performance. On the Syndication Math Show with Nathan Ross, CPA, Sundays at 7 a.m. right here on KSEV.
Hey, if you'd like to contact Nathan for questions during the show today or during the week, you can text him at 713-581-0195, 713-581-0195, or you can send an email to nathan@npross.com, nathan@npross.com.
Whether you're a seasoned investor or just getting started with real estate private partnership syndications, you can now take advantage of direct online investing options. Tune in Sundays at 7 a.m. to the Be a Planner Syndication Math Show with Nathan Ross, CPA, right here on KSEV.
Time is a good day.
Welcome back to the second segment of the Be a Planner Syndication Mass Show. I think we'll probably end up just doing the one break today, give us a little bit more time to dig in. And Dan, I wanted to clarify, you know, I assume sometimes that people understand what a Roth conversion is and what it costs to do it, et cetera. And I guess we do need to make sure people understand that, hey, if you want to convert funds from pre-tax to Roth, that you do have to pay a conversion tax. And that's essentially what we're talking about minimizing because of the discounts that we get with these private company valuations. So you would be paying whatever bracket you're in, but the base, the tax base that you would calculate on would be after significant discounts on these real estate private partnership syndications, typically anywhere from, you know, 40 to 50, maybe as much as 70%, depending on how heavy of a rehab is necessary. And so, you know, if you talk about, put it in dollars, if you had $100,000 sitting at Schwab that you wanted to convert and you were in the 32% bracket tax-wise for that year, you'd be paying $32,000. Whereas if you were in a private real estate partnership and on the low end had 50% worth of discounts, so the remaining tax base was $50,000, same bracket, that puts you in the roughly $15,000, I guess, $15,600 or so of tax. It's a significant discount to make that conversion. So it's not just getting out of future taxes, although that's certainly the bigger component. It's also taking advantage of tax savings now. Something else we talked about earlier, Dan, or yesterday, that I guess I should clarify. I promise we're going to get to a couple of these syndications. We talked about TurboTax just briefly and what a wonderful piece of technology it is. And we compared it to the Makita saw that you love so near and dear to your heart, that does not make you a carpenter. No matter how marvelous the technology is that goes into that tool. And, you know, I think another way of looking at this that we probably glanced over is, I'm going to read a quote from a tax pro that I saw online once, and I saved it off. It says, using TurboTax or other tax preparation software is a great time saver for doing mathematically accurate returns compared to doing them manually. I would add, God forbid, if it's me doing them manually. I don't know about you, Dan. Can you even think about that? I was so fortunate that when I started my CPA practice, I availed myself of the first computerized 1040 program that was out there. This is 1985, and I know that sounds like a lifetime ago, and I guess it is in a manner of thinking. But anyway, but such computer software is still not a substitute for superior tax reduction planning and IRS audit proofing. And, you know, TurboTax is not going to give you great tax-saving gems such as cost segregation, tangible bonus depreciation, helping you understand self-directed 401 trust, IRAs, etc., 1031 exchanges, and so much more. Further, they have standard defaults in the system that might inappropriately cap your rental property losses, depending on whether you might qualify as a real estate professional. And yeah, you can override things, but you have to understand what you're doing. And most lay people, unfortunately, just like I know I had a Makita saw until I almost cut my leg off. And then I decided I was better off, you know, paying somebody to come do it. But I tell you what, that got my attention. I didn't actually hurt my leg, but let's just say the saw lost control where it went right past my kneecap, and I stopped it right there and then, unplugged it, put it back in the box, and I've never touched it again. In fact, I think we gave that to my father-in-law. And anyway, scary stuff. But in any event, so, you know, again, you know, what we do as professionals, if we were driving TurboTax to do a return, it's a different perspective altogether. Just like if a carpenter was building that doghouse that Dan was trying to build, it probably would be square when he's done. Whereas, you know, I'm willing to bet you that, Dan, you didn't quite get to square just because I know what happens on these projects, right? Yeah. But I also knows what happens on tax returns, and I've reviewed quite a few returns that have been prepared using TurboTax, and there's always something. And it's not the software. It's never the software. It's somebody turned left when they should have turned right. Anyway, so Dan, let's talk about a couple of projects that are out now in the capital raise mode. The first one is from the Realty Mogul site. And for those of you that have listened to the show, you may have heard me mention there's three platforms. If you want a big time platform that's been out there for a while, the CrowdStreet.com group, RealtyMogul.com, and Fundrise are all three platforms that, just like you don't call the travel agent anymore, you don't have to call the old school membership platforms that, you know, you pay big membership fees to participate in these transactions. And yeah, you can go out to CrowdStreet or Realty Mogul or Fundrise and see a plethora of different genres of real estate and, you know, medical facilities, hotels, retail strip centers, apartments, of course, is the bulk of them. And, you know, you can look to your heart's delight to find something that intrigues you. The only criteria that I'll tell you that you got to expect is that you have to be accredited to invest, I think, in all but Fundrise. I think Fundrise has some transactions that the non-accrediteds can invest in. But in any event, Dan, let's talk about a project that caught our eye because it has a fairly, at least targeted, got to be careful. We always put the word targeted in front of any kind of math that might be produced with it. But why don't you talk a little bit about that project and what the math looks like and why it caught our attention?
You know, this particular project is a brand new to be constructed in New Jersey. It's a $19.5 million deal with 60 units, which means to me that that's a really high dollar per unit, what, $3.25 per unit, something like that.
Yeah, that's, I was going to say, it's
like
over
a very nice project when it's done. 60 units in one building yielding, you know, they're saying 150x multiple EMX. It's a 65% loan to value with almost a 6% loan is what they're projecting to. I mean, it's got a very good surface look at the distributions to the passive. There's total passive investment of $5 million. And they're getting, you know, looking at getting that 1.5 EMX over 2.5 years, I believe, what they're projecting.
Yeah, two and a half, right? That's what you said?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, it's a fairly short target. Now, again, this is targeted. And, you know, I know a little bit about Houston. I know nothing about New Jersey submarkets. They're making it sound like it's a glowing opportunity. What do you think, Dan, the reality is in that submarket there? Are people still able to – well, these are starter dwellings, I would suggest, right?
No, they're not starters. These are $2, almost $3 square foot unit rents. I mean, they're very small, high rental. They do have – I think it's very interesting. They do have six, so there's 10% of it is set aside for affordable housing at home.
Okay.
I mean,
but these are being sold.
$1.25 a foot rather than the $3 a foot. But it's exactly the same unit.
Yeah, but the business model is they're going to build them and then they're going to sell them off individually, correct?
No, they're not for sale.
Well, there was disposition fees that they were saying would occur on each closing, which I guess made me think it was for sales. But they do have leasing costs built in, so I guess maybe there's a hybrid there. But bottom line is 20.08 target IRR. That's pretty good. And then 2.5 years, if they're really talking about 2.5 years on the dot, that's going to be 30 months, correct, Dan?
Yeah.
And so 30 times 0.0463, if we were looking at our 20% compounded ROI objective, would get you to 1.389. They're targeting 1.50. So they're doing better than what we would hope for, right? And what about the splits? Do you remember what those look like between passive?
They do have an 8% preferred return. After that, we get 75-25, and then up to, what is it, to give them 12%. And then after that, we get 65-35, and then after, you know, for another level, and then 50, finally down to 60-40. So, I mean, it's a pretty nice deal on the surface.
It's not that bad. Now, the fees are not light. Did you notice what the fees were, Dan?
I thought they were kind of light relative to a almost $20 million deal. They're looking at, I wrote down here, it's like $600,000 on the construction fee, they call it. And this is new construction, do you remember? 60 units, new construction.
It seemed like they had an acquisition fee, and then they had construction management. They had a debt raising fee to an affiliate if they couldn't get third party money they couldn't go directly to a bank. But anyway, it's not horrible. And again, if they hit these targets, you almost don't care. The question is timing. And I'm presuming, aside from the promote, most of those fees are earned between, I mean, the disposition fee is very small. I think it was 0.5% maybe. But again, this is the reason we wanted to look at this, or the reason it caught our eye was because it was unusual in that it was new construction and had this kind of return, not just in 5 or 6 years, but in 2.5 years. Now, I don't know the area. The area must be deprived of, new housing to get these numbers. And their rental rates, I do see where they're renting. So maybe with the sales they were talking about, we're selling it to another operator. I don't know. But anyway, did you see what the rents were, Dan? Average monthly rent, the rent per foot?
Yeah, it doesn't sound... 20, rent per foot for the market rents is $2.96 a foot.
Yeah, and they're projecting what? 2.67. So they're not doing anything unusual. They're not being irrational, on their projection. Average monthly rent's $2,210. I mean, this is New Jersey, after all, and Wharton, New Jersey, right? So, I mean, if you just asked me in general, the rate's much higher than, say, Houston, I'd say, man, they're probably three times. But this doesn't appear. This is an 843-square-foot average unit size. I mean, these are, higher. Well, I guess they're higher than Houston. I don't know. I'm sure there's new builds that somebody like Camden or Hanover are putting up that are at least $2.67 a foot. Don't you imagine? Dan, I haven't shopped the market lately.
The land out there, I'm sure, is a big, big cost there in New Jersey. It's a three, it's a four story with three living and one parking, the lowest level four story.
And so, And this is an experienced executive team as well. I haven't heard of this company, but if you read about some of the other projects they've done, you can tell they've made it to the finish line, and they at least purport to have returned above average rates of return to their investors. let's
not
see,
just multifamily. They've done, you know, commercial as well as storage. So it's and rent and office rentals. It's I think they said over several $1 billion worth of property. I forget the exact number, but it's their experience, no doubt.
Well, they've done
20 years.
Yeah, they've done. If you look at their track record, they've got a list of about 20 properties that they've undertaken, and they range from, I don't know, the case studies they've got here from like a 58 unit up to a 396 unit. So they've run the gamut, and you know, it's some good looking product. I mean, it's definitely class A product. Okay, well, let's do this. Let's pivot now and talk about, well, first of all, let's make sure we just kind of recap here on who could invest in this. If you're accredited, this deal is open to you. So you could log on to Realty Mogul, set up an account, and look for the, I believe it's called the Wharton. Is that the name of the offering, Dan? So this is, you know, there is no opportunity on this project for a non-accredited. This is definitely a 506C, and as a result, you can walk up now. You didn't have to have a prior relationship. And for that matter, you may be surprised if you look around out on Realty Mogul. I noticed a transaction popped up that self-made millionaire here recently, or let's say recently, sometime in the past couple years, but I think they've done a replay, actually has a self-made billionaire as part of his mentor group. And I was shocked to learn, Mr. DeBose, that self-made billionaire has offerings, syndicated offerings, out on Realty Mogul. That blew me away. And boy, do they have some fees. So, you know, it's interesting, the do as I say, not as I do, that seems to pervade that platform is evidenced with, you know, one of the poster children, I guess you might say. And so for those of you that have always wanted to invest with the self-made billionaire, and he is quite a performer. I'm being a little facetious, but I have to admit, I respect him. And at least what I know, I'm always turned off a little bit about people, and it's not so much him as it is a self-made millionaire that try to project something that they're not. And I know the video that I saw out on YouTube about this, which you can Google that if you'd like, claims that this gentleman has over $1 billion in assets. Well, that's not true. It's just like he doesn't own over 20,000 doors, which is what it says. He's an owner in a portfolio that's worth $1 billion plus. Just like I'm an owner in a property that's worth $120 million or more. And, you know, I own, I don't know, 0.00-something%. But I always interject the word an, in front of owner, because I just find it, you know, it's counter to my radar when I hear somebody say they own so many doors, and I'm thinking, oh, gee, you know, that's impressive. And then I find out, oh, well, you own 0.008 of that many doors, which means I own more doors than you, because I've got two independent properties that collectively are 100%, or most of it's my ownership. I've got a partner that's 15%. But bottom line is, just be real, be honest. You're already so impressive to most of us. You don't need to fudge the truth. And you know, I'd say this about my favorite president as well, you know, Mr. Trump. You know, look at all he's accomplished, and yet he's still got to remind us how wealthy he is from time to time. And I don't know. That's troubling. But in any event, let's move on, Dan. The transaction I want to talk about next, this is a 506B. You would have to both be a member of the platform involved, and you would need to have a prior relationship. So it's too late. The docs are already out, and you might want to run a spell check. I noticed several misspelled words here in the documents, which that, you know, it's understandable. It happens. I send out emails that have misspellings. I try not to do lengthy documents like this one where you're trying to perhaps raise money. You really don't want sloppiness when it comes to this stuff. But okay, so be it. I'm just a picky caveman accountant. In any event, this is a transaction that's down in Corpus Christi. It's a combination of two properties. One's a 208-unit property, and then the second one is 128 units. I'm told by looking at the investment, the slide deck, if you will, that it is irreplaceable, these two properties, irreplaceable in a rare location. And it very well may be. They're good-looking properties, and I would suggest to you that the lead partner involved here has significant credibility. He's got a background as a passive investor. Again, proving my point that it's typically best to invest passively before you go off and try to do your own projects as a lead. And in any event, if you look at the plan here, these are 1975 build properties. Looks like, you know, they're decent properties in their current state for that age. They definitely need some exterior renovations, and I think that's the plan. The CapEx or the upgrades that are already underway with the existing owner are approximately $1.2 million. That's not a ton of money given the size of the property, but at least, you know, they're trying to do some updates. And, of course, part of the plan with this particular syndication will be to complete the renovation so they can bring the rents up significantly, if I recall. The purchase price is about a $37 million combined purchase. Interestingly, they're getting an agency loan, it appears. I don't think they've got the final financing in place, but they've got quotes. And Dan, not seeing many of these out there, they've got what looks like the possibility for either a 7 or 10 year term. And I think they're waiting on a third. If I remember right, the Fannie Mae quote is still outstanding. But in any event, 7 to 10 year loan term. And they're saying 75% leverage. That's pretty amazing, given what we know is going on, right? They do say rates.
Absolutely amazing. That'd be a fantastic loan by today's look.
Well,
we don't know the interest rate yet, but it looks like it. I'm on surface. It is a fabulous.
Well,
project.
Let me tell you the interest rate. Now, again, this was as of August 1st, and the lead wisely indicates rates will change by the time we do a rate lock. So he's, you know, this guy's not blowing smoke. He's being honest. The interest rate projected is 2.62 plus up to 1.8 would be the spread. So that gets you over the 4.5 roughly mark. All in would be 4.42%. So I guess close to 4.5. And again, I don't know that the Fannie Mae, which I understand is outstanding from the client that submitted this to me. But that's pretty impressive in terms of, I mean, just the 75% LTV is going to keep, is going to keep somewhat of the equity multiple in place. And I have some financial information. You know, we always like to find out what do we have coming in, what's projected the cash distributions over, you know, operational distributions that are received throughout the life of the project, the refi distributions, if any, and then the sell. And I didn't really get a chance to look at this to figure out exactly where the equity multiple is. But in any event, they're showing a maximum of 5 years, it appears, and a minimum hold of 3. So I suspect with debt like this, and you got a 7 or 10 year term, he's probably got a pretty good shot at getting to what we think of as the gold standard, 20% compounded ROI. But Dan, did you get a chance to look at this one at all? I'm curious. Besides these very high level,
no, I did not look at it at all. I'm sorry.
Okay. Well, one thing I was going to mention, the rehab budget with the new ownership. Let's see. One of the properties is about $950,000. And let's see. Do I have the other one here? $1.5 million. So $2.5 million, that's still not a ton of money per unit, you know, when you figure out the total units involved. But some of the units are already renovated. The current owner has done them, and the images are very pleasing. And I suspect, you know, the top line rental growth they're projecting is not all that aggressive. You know, they're about on one of the properties, they're at right at $2 million and at point of acquisition, they're suggesting they'll be at $2.1 million after 3 years. So this to me is a very rational deal. And, you know, the room that they've got, for rental rates, however, may not be as much as we would like to see, but hey, if, you know, the occupancy stays high, or if they can fill up the empty units, I think these two properties are both fairly well occupied. I don't see that metric here, but in any event, I'm going to look at this further. I'm really interested in more of the math and where, you know, what point do we get our money back if they were to do a refinance versus a sell. And again, I think this looks very conservatively underwritten. And, you know, the Corpus submarket's a mixed bag. You know, what I've seen about Corpus is that it blows and goes, and then it pauses. And it may be a while before it blows and goes again. So I don't know. That's the only thing I would suggest when you look at deals there. Okay, we're at the end of the show. Dan, thanks for joining again this week. And I wish
we had
more time. We'll be back Saturday at 5 p.m. with more of the Be a Planner Tax Mash show. And we're going to talk about asset protection and entity selection and audit proofing your tax returns this next show on Saturday. Thanks for tuning in. We look forward to the next time.
Thanks for listening to Be a Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA. Be sure to tune in next Saturday at 5 for another edition of Be a Planner Show here on AM 700 KSEV.